When you first get married, you're both all in. Like, we are all in. But then the years go by, you stop having fun together, you stop being grateful, you stop serving each other. You're like, we don't need rules, we got this. And all of a sudden you realize one of us is not showing up in the same way that the other one is showing up.
Yeah.
So there's a humility that needs to come to say, you know what, I'm going to show up to my marriage. And even if I feel like, well, I'm going to wait for him or her to show up first, no. Your attitude is, I'm going to be the one.
That's Arlene Pellicane, and she joins us today on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller.
Well, this is the very heart of what we do here at Focus on the Family. Marriage is the foundation on which the family is built, and I think most important to God, and it's important to us here. And we hear stories all the time about how tough marriage is. I've had some 20-somethings say to me, Jim, can we say, you know, marriage is positive rather than it's hard work? But you know what? Sometimes it is hard work, and it's kind of like gardening. You have to till the soil, you need to water, and sometimes I do that well, and sometimes I don't do that as well as I should be. And today we're going to talk with our great guest, Arlene Pellicane, to give us some insights and tools to do this better.
Yeah, it's a light program. It's not going to be a heavy one. Arlene brings joy and energy, and she is a speaker. She's the host of the Happy Home Podcast. She's married to James. They have three children. And she's written a number of books, one of which we'll talk about today, Making Marriage Easier, How to Love and Like Your Spouse for Life.
Arlene, welcome back to Focus on the Family.
So good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Do you ever have a down day? Every
of
time I've seen you, you're just
these
bubbles of smiles. Are you sure?
they're kind of few and far between, but I do have a down day.
So yes. James has seen this, your husband.
Well, I am that eternal optimist. So he will say, like, sometimes, can you just kind of tone that down? Like, I know you're happy about that. I get it. So
no, it's great.
He might find that refreshing, actually, if I kind of came out and was like, hi.
he would say, what's wrong?
Yeah, what's wrong?
Let's get to the real brass tacks. Your husband enjoys camping. Yay, James.
Yay,
way
James.
To go, James. But
Whoopee.
It's not really your jam.
No. Our family, like, saw the lake and went to the lodge, you know? It was like, that was awesome.
I think Jean's pretty, she loves camping, but we finally went from like a tent to a fifth wheel because Jean was like, I'd really like a bed. So, okay, I'm going to get you a big bed. So anyway, but tell us about James and you when it comes to camping.
Yeah, so we've definitely done all the different levels. And so the highest level we have done is, you know, that 2 to 3 day backpacking trip where you are really like carrying 28 pounds on your back. You are going for 18 miles in 2 days, whatever, right? So we did this. And every time I do this, I say to myself, this is the last time I will ever do this.
Because it's so beautiful out here.
Ridiculous, right? And so as I'm doing this last year, you know, my kids love it. James loves it. So it's like, I must love it. So it's like, okay, I'm going to try this. And when the path was beautiful, like you're saying, it's like, oh, I will totally do this again. This is fantastic. I mean, where else can you get this? We're all in a tent together. We all have stinky feet. We're playing games. Like, it's very magical. Like, this is very bonding. We're in the middle of nowhere together as a family. Like, this is really special. But then there's the other times where it's like, oh, look, there's still some snow on that pass and we have to cross that. And oh, look, we've been going uphill for 2 hours.
Both ways.
But yeah. And it's those times where it's like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I will never do this again. And as I'm walking, you know, I'm in this process of also writing this book, Making Marriage Easier. And in my brain, I'm thinking, oh, my word, this is like marriage. Like, when it's good, you're like, this is fantastic. I love this. But when it's bad, you're going through hard times, you have difficulties, you're not communicating, things are bad. It's like, I am out of here. And, you know, you have the map and you look at the map and you say, okay, I see it, this little dotted line. It's going to be 28 miles round trip, whatever it is. Like, I see that. But until you actually do it, you really don't know, like, what is going to be there. So for me, it really showed me that, okay, when you pick the path, like, there was no way I could stop. Like, I couldn't say halfway. Mm-hmm. I remember once I told James, if I could pay $5,000 to be airlifted from this spot, I would do it. I told him that. But you can't. Like, you have to make the loop. You have to make it all the way around. And that is marriage, that you commit to, like, we are going to make this loop. And to realize, yes, there's going to be patches that are hard, But there's going to be a ton of patches that are really, really beautiful and totally worth the journey.
Right. I mean, some of those treks, it's like left foot, right foot,
exactly.
Left foot.
Yes.
But it feels, you know, this monotony.
Just get through the day.
Get through the
like,
day.
Like, get through the day, say something kind, and go to sleep.
Well,
and that's all you're going to do.
The saying something kind is a good one. And in fact, you talk about four decisions couples can adopt to make marriage easier. Now, here's a premise. Maybe marriage is given to us by the Lord. It is an institution that he started, the family. We didn't come up with it. It says right there in Scripture, family, government, and church are kind of the three institutions that God put forward. It's interesting for government because it's to restrain evil. Mm-hmm. That is its core mission.
Right.
But in that respect with family, you mentioned these four decisions. What are they?
Yeah, we want to make it real easy and simple. So the first decision is to play by the rules. Decide what you will and won't do in your marriage. The second is to give thanks every day, just to simply be like, thank you, God, for my spouse, and have that perspective.
Arlene, sometimes that can be difficult. That one right there. I mean, because you just had a little rough interaction together.
Right.
And you say, no, thank you, Lord.
Yeah.
Why is that important to have that perspective?
Yeah.
And especially when it's a valley, not a mountaintop.
Yeah. It is, I think, the gratitude to the Lord. So it is that attitude of like, God, this is the place I'm in, and I am so grateful that you are God. Mm. I am so grateful that you are there. Because think of the children of Israel, right? They are going to get in so much trouble, not because they made another calf or not because they had all this adulterous things happen. They're going to get in trouble because they were like, God, you're doing all this stuff for us, but it's not enough. We don't like it. We're sick of the manna. We're sick of the quail. We are ungrateful. And that's what keeps them out mm-hmm. of the promised land. And I think in a marriage, we can get so used to nagging and grousing and just being so upset that we lose sight of it. And God does not like that very much. So for us to realize, okay, I will be grateful just because I need to grow. As a Christian, I need to grow in my relationship with God. So maybe I am just grateful that, you know, if you have a sick spouse, you know how grateful you would be if your spouse was just well. Mm. So if we are just upset because our spouse is annoying, I mean, we can say, well, thank you, God, that my spouse is well.
Okay.
You know, there's so inspect, look for things to say thank you for. Mm-hmm. You know, my husband, James, he kept a journal one week of all the little things he noticed about me that he was thankful for. And then he handed it to me. It was the week before Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's good.
He handed it to me and it would say things like, I'm thankful that you take the kids to one kid now. I'm thankful that you take Lucy to school and you talk with her all the time. I'm thankful that you like made a really nice dinner tonight. Like these things that he was making note of. So I think even though we think, I can't find one thing about this man, about this woman, you can find one thing.
Oh, yeah.
You can, and you probably can find five.
All right. So play by the rules, set the main rules, play by the rules, and then make sure you're thankful to God for your spouse. What's the third one?
The third decision is to serve your spouse. Serve your spouse.
What's the fourth one? Let's move to the next one.
Yeah, exactly. The fourth one is take fun seriously. So we'll get there.
Okay.
But the serve your spouse, right? It's like, I don't want to serve my spouse because he or she have not been serving me. We are very transactional. We get that way that like, well, you didn't do that for me, so I'm not going to do that for you. But then if you look at the Gospels, right, it's like Jesus came to serve. The Son of Man came to serve. And you're like, oh, man. So it is this idea that, well, wait, if I serve my spouse, well, they're going to walk all over me.
Yeah.
You know, like, how's that going to work?
Right.
But guess what happens? You don't have power over what your spouse does, but you do have power over what you do. And if you ask the question, well, what have you done for me today? You're going to be pretty grumpy and find not very much. But if you twist it, thinking of serving your spouse and say, well, what can I do for you today? And it's as simple as like, oh, I'm going to bring James, you know, we both work from home. I'm going to refresh his water. I'm going to notice that his water glass is empty and I'm going to bring it. Because that's me like, what can I do for you today? So just that idea of what can I do for you, that's life-giving. Then you feel like, oh, I did a good thing, and you feel kind of good versus waiting for your spouse to do something nice for you.
No, that's good. And then the last one, again, you touched on it, but bring it back.
Take fun seriously.
Okay.
A lot of us think like, oh, I don't have time for fun. Like that was for dating. We don't have any time for that now. But to realize that, wait a minute, this is actually important. to have fun together. Because when it's all said and done, when your kids leave the house, you need something that's fun. And if you don't actually plan fun or value fun, the whole thing becomes a drag. And that's when you're like, well, this is hard. This is not easy anymore. So fun is really a key component.
Well, I talked to your husband, James. He said he'd like to go camping with you for fun.
Exactly.
You're going to be good at that? Is that going to be fun?
I guess so, man.
That'll be our opportunity to serve.
I'll be like, I must serve. I must give thanks. I must serve. I must give thanks.
Let's dig into some of these. Let's go back to the main rules. For illustration purposes, give us an example of you and James and maybe a rule that you've stuck to from the beginning.
Yeah. When we were first married, I was not a good cook. Like, I didn't know how to cook. And I thought the George Foreman grill would save my life because all I had to do was stick the chicken in, close the lid, open the lid, and take the chicken out. So I was pretty excited about this. Perfect. So I bought the George Foreman grill. I had two chicken breasts, and so that'd be a big night. And James, who is very spontaneous, he's like, I just met the neighbor Walter next door. Can I invite him to dinner? And I was like, no, because our home is not nice. I only have two chickens, and I'm a nervous cook. No. And guess what happened?
I can guess.
Knock, 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 knock. It's Walter. He's here for dinner. And I'm just like, what? So that was our first big fight.
But you got to tell us the solution.
Was that. And so I was so mad. So mad. Like, how could he not listen?
You gave Walter James's chicken breast.
Exactly. I gave him my chicken. That's what happened.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
You're such a good Christian.
I should have given him James's chicken.
Exactly.
I should have given him only vegetables. And I was very nice to Walter, right?
Oh,
very nice to Walter. And then Walter left. And then I was like, brr. And then James, like, pounced on me, like, literally, like kind of, like, bear hugged me. And it was like, I'm sorry. And I was like, are you really sorry? Or you're just like, what are you sorry for? And he's like, I'm just sorry that you're mad, you know? But that was like, no. You need to be sorry that you invited someone, even though I had said no, and you need to respect my no. And he was like, okay. And so this is a rule, right? When I put down a boundary, respect it. And I will say that from that day forward, in the 25 years of marriage, he never brings anyone unannounced. They always come announced and expected. My. But another rule that comes out of that that's really good is the power hour, is that you eat together every day.
Yeah, that's
and it's
good.
Just a rhythm because it's kind of crazy. If you talk to an average couple and you say, hey, do you guys eat together? Or like a family, do you guys eat together? They'll be kind of like, well, we run to sports. We go to this. We just kind of all eat, or we eat in our separate rooms. We just kind of get the food and go to different places and eat. And honestly, a rule that you can set down is we eat together.
Yeah.
And it's nothing like legalistic, like, oh, don't put that in your mouth. We're not together. It's not like that. It's just that, hey, it's dinner time.
Spend time together.
We all know, let's eat dinner together. Are there times you don't? Of course, that there's exceptions, but the rule is we eat together every day. And if you're listening and that can't be dinner, maybe that's coffee in the morning, but it's something where in the rhythm of your life every day, because we'll have to eat. lots of us need coffee. We all need that. So use it as a time to be together and make that a rule.
Mm-hmm. Well, Arlene, another thing that you talked about in the book is a pool table. That had to do with some thankfulness, and that became an issue for you. Yes. Tell us that story.
It is the accumulation of stuff, right?
Wait, what? How do you use your pool table?
Accumulation.
That's a flat surface.
Yeah,
you put everything on top of it.
That's not how you do it.
It's so funny. So we wanted a pool table because our kids were growing up, right? So then you think of, like, what are things around the house that you can have that kind of give an environment where you'll hang out and do stuff. So we're like, perfect, we'll get a pool table. Well, a pool table is a very large item. And if you know us, we're frugal. So, of course, this was a used pool table. But we really did find a beautiful one, and we really did put it in our front room. We gave away two old sofas, put the pool table in. We did use it for a while, and that's great. But you know what happened to it. It gets covered. And then you put stuff on it, and all of a sudden it's not
table.
A pool table. It's a great table. That's exactly right. And it gets, you know, when people come over, people take the stuff off it, they play it, and that's great. But what you find as a couple is you think, well, this will make me happy. I will get the pool table and I'll be happy. We'll remodel the kitchen and I'll be happy. We'll go on that vacation and we'll be happy. But we realize, wait a minute, we get all these things, but it's just a short-term happiness. So to realize that the accumulation of stuff is not what's going to fix your marriage. And really to be more thankful for what you have, inspect what you have and not what you don't have. You know, when we were first married in that same apartment that Walter came to, we had trash bags on the windows because we didn't have any curtains. So one day we were like, well, what if we just put some hefty bags here and like block the light? And we're like, wow, this is really working great. So we use them literally like curtains, black hefty bags with little twists, you know, little ties.
Taped together.
Ties taped together. And then we're like, wow, this really actually works. So for months we had that. And to be honest, we were happy as could be.
Let me ask you, Arlene, in the book you emphasize this. This is something we cover a lot at Focus on the Family. And I think couples lose perspective regarding this. But to make your home a marriage-centered home, not a child-centered home, that's a hard thing to do because so much of your attention goes towards your kids, especially in the early years and, you know, getting them ready for school and doing all the things that we do. If you're homeschooling, all of that activity. How do you not fall into the trap of making your home a child-centric home?
Yeah. And it's just think of it like when you have a child, they enter your home. They're a welcome member of your home, but they are not the sun that you are orbiting constantly around. Okay, how can you know? Because obviously when the child comes home, like when you have a baby come home, we get it. We had Ethan, he was like Simba, whoa! You know, it's like like this amazing thing. And we all, you know, we get it. When you have a baby, yes, you have to orbit around this baby to keep the baby alive. But when the baby turns 2, 4, 10, 16, you don't have to orbit around the baby. And I will say as a woman, usually, it doesn't have to be, but usually it's the mom who is the one that we are just really into the kids. We are very much like if my kid needs a costume, I'll go buy it or make it. If my kid, you know, needs something for school, I will do it. But if my husband is like, hey, honey, could you look at this? You know, I'm an author. So he'll be like, hey, honey, could you look at this letter for me and see how you think it sounds? I'll be like, I don't have time for that. Use Grammarly. You know, like and I'm caught. I realize I don't treat my husband the same way I treat my children. Like if my kids ask me for something, I'm like, oh, I'm all in. You need me to drop you off? You need me to just hang out at the mall for 8 hours so I can pick you up again? Okay, I'll do that. But if my husband asks me for something, hey, why can't you do that yourself, buddy? So that's a kind of good measure. Like, am I really treating my spouse as the priority relationship? If it's time for date night, am I like, oh, we can't do that date night thing because we have, you know, I even if let's say you have a trusted babysitter, like someone that's good, but you're like, oh, the kids hate it when we leave. Well, I'm sorry, you still have to leave because your kids are really going to hate it when you don't like each other 10 years from now. So you do have to think like this is a priority relationship.
It's still in that category of giving thanks every day for your spouse. Let's camp our heads there for a minute.
Yeah.
But you mentioned forgiveness is necessary in marriage. And you quote, I think it's Ruth Bell Graham, which she said, a happy marriage is the union of two good forgivers. I love that. That's a great thought. You encourage couples to forgive the small things. And one of those small things that involved your first book contract and an ice cream party.
Yeah.
What happened there?
I had my first book. I mean, this is kind of exciting, right? But again, we have little kids. We are frugal. So I say to James, I'm going to be a published author. Let's get ice cream.
This wasn't
This wasn't even like, let's go out for ice cream. This was like, let's buy 2 gallons of ice cream and have ice cream after dinner. And so my only request was that one of them would have chocolate in it. Pretty easy request. Not that difficult. He comes home with our 5-year-old and our 3-year-old. And I open the bag and the first ice cream is caramel pecan crunch. I'm like, well, that's an interesting choice. We actually had never had that before. And I was like, okay. The second choice was cookies and cream. And I'm like, neither of these are chocolate. And I am the one who is the author that we're celebrating in this super frugal way. And I am pregnant with our third child, and I have just asked for chocolate, and you bring me cookies and cream. And, you know, he could argue, well, it has a chocolate cookie in it. That is not chocolate, right? That is not like chocolate ganache or fudge ripple or chocolate and peanut butter.
There
is no chocolate in it.
Ice cream.
There is no chocolate in it. So I'm just mad. Like, you cannot even get this little thing right. And isn't this kind of about me, right? So I'm eating, and I'm mad. And Ethan, who's 5, is like, Mommy, you don't seem very grateful. You tell us we should be thankful for everything we're served. You know, all of us have had that moment, right? Where our words come back to
Without
us.
Without a doubt.
And I'm like, it cracked my chocolate heart. And I said, Ethan, you're right. I should be grateful. I am grateful. And I forgave James, and I talked about it later, and I forgave him. And there is something beautiful and lovely that happens when we can say, you know what? I make mistakes. You make mistakes. Let's just move on. And I think, like, if we could have such an attitude, like, to defend our spouse, like, maybe they were really under a lot of pressure, or I'm going to defend them and just think the best of them. And obviously, when there is an egregious offense on purpose, you know, that's not something you just go like, oh, well, I guess he didn't. No, you have to say it. So make the small thing small. But keep the big things big. Like, if there's something big you need to forgive about, that's a big discussion. Maybe that's counseling. Maybe that's something else. So please hear me as I say that. But the forgiveness is the goal. That's where you're headed.
Arlene, lastly, you encourage couples to show up. And I guess the obvious question is, what do you mean by showing up?
Yes. Is like, even when you don't feel like it, you show up. You don't feel like putting a smile on your face, you do it. You say good morning and you give the hug. It's those little habits that you – rhythms of your day that you respect your spouse. You know, we had the very funny situation of when we got married. You know, I was always like, oh, I want to get married so bad. So finally, when getting married, it was so exciting. And my hairdresser the morning of the wedding said, something's going to go wrong. It always does, honey. So just be ready. Something's going to go wrong, sweetie. It's like, okay, I'm ready. Well, I wasn't ready for what was going to go wrong. Because basically during the ceremony, you know, the groomsmen were all there. My aunt was playing the piano. There was a break in the music. And our professor, a theology professor, very distinguished, it was his second wedding. And he thought the break in the music was to start the ceremony.
And he's performing the ceremony.
He's performing the ceremony. So he says in the break of the music, dearly beloved, we are now gathered together. And I am in the hall. I am not even there. I am in the hall. I'm like, oh my word, my wedding is starting without me, and I'm on my dad's arm, and I'm like, this is crazy. And he does not look up because he's looking at his notes. So he gets all the way to the part of who gives this bride to this man, and he looks up, and it's only my husband, James. And he says, where's Peter? Because that's my dad. And he would answer the question, right? And then you realize what has happened. And he starts saying, oh my, oh my, oh my. Music starts, da, 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 da. And then the girls come down the aisle. I come down the aisle. And he says, now we're really ready to get started. And the poor friends and family, they don't know whether they should be like laughing hysterically or if they should be like really mortified. So it's kind of like, they just have this very strange thing. But after that, it was flawless. But when that ceremony started, I was not there. And obviously, when you're married, when you first get married, you're both all in. Like, we are all in. But then the years go by, you stop having fun together, you stop being grateful, you stop serving each other. You're like, we don't need rules, we got this. And all of a sudden you realize one of us is not showing up in the same way that the other one is showing up.
Yeah.
So there's a humility that needs to come to say, you know what, I don't want the music to start without me, I'm going to show up to my marriage. And even if I'm feel like, well, I'm going to wait for him or her to show up first, no. Your attitude is, I'm going to be the one, and I will show up first.
Oh, yeah. Your next book could be that, The Woman That Didn't Make It to Her Own Wedding by Arlene Pelican.
I was prepared, but I wasn't there.
Arlene, this is so good, and what a great reminder for all of us as couples to do these four things, and I hope that this is something that you would want to come back to and read. There's much more detail in the book. We covered some of the fun highlights, and you do such a great job sharing the stories, and poor James.
Sweet James.
Sweet James. But it's so wonderful. So thank you for being with us, and thanks for writing this wonderful book, and I hope people will get a hold of it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
What a fun conversation with Arlene Pelican. And those four decisions certainly can make marriage easier, and I trust that you've picked up on some ways that you can put those into practice in your own relationship. On behalf of the entire team, thanks for listening to Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller.
Well, I loved today's conversation with Arlene Pelican. What an encouraging reminder that marriage doesn't have to be so hard. When we make the choice to be intentional in our relationship, to serve one another, to be grateful, to have fun, and to stay committed even through the tough patches, we begin to see just how beautiful the journey of marriage really is. Arlene's analogy of hiking a difficult trail really hit home. You can't call for a rescue halfway through. You've committed to the path, and when you push through the hard parts, you discover moments of deep joy and connection that make it all worth it. And with that in mind, I want to remind you that SA Marriage Week is coming up in the first week of September. This year's theme is Unbreakable, and it's a wonderful opportunity to invest in your marriage. You can subscribe on the SA Marriage Week website to receive daily content, activities, and ideas to help you reconnect with your spouse. Plan a date night, join a local event, or simply take the time to focus on each other. Visit safamily.co.za to find the link to SA Marriage Week and sign up for the exciting program. Let me also encourage you to get a copy of Arlene's wonderful book, Making Marriage Easier: How to Love and Like Your Spouse for Life. You can do that when you call us on 031-716-3300 or find it on our website. That address again is safamily.co.za. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Alison Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa, inviting you back next time as we continue to help you and your family thrive in Christ.